From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us live from our affiliate KFYI in Phoenix as she attends the International UFO Congress. She'll be talking live with the father of modern-day ufology, Stanton Friedman. Reporter Jim Mars will join her, and also Travis Walton, Fire from the Sky. Here's what's happening. What a bizarre story. Mind control in the military. The top U.S. commander in Afghanistan is ordering an investigation into charges that an Army unit trained in psychological operations was improperly told to manipulate American senators to get more money and troops for the war. A senator targeted said that he's confident there will be a review of the facts, but he played down the idea that he was being mind manipulated. What a story. A 20-year-old Saudi Arabian student has been arrested in Texas in a bomb plot that may have targeted former President George W. Bush and nuclear power plants. Khalid Al-Dawasari was admitted to the United States in 2008 on a student visa. He was attending college in Lubbock, Texas. He was arrested by FBI agents, accused of terrorism charges involving the purchase of chemicals and equipment to make a bomb with potential targets that included power plants and former President George W. Bush. One of his emails included, of course, the Dallas address of Bush. Department officials said there was no evidence the suspect was part of a militant group and he apparently had been acting alone. But U.S. officials have been concerned about individuals acting alone to commit attacks in the United States. And Lebanon leader Muammar Gaddafi is blaming the uprising in his country on al-Qaeda followers who give young Libyans pills in their coffee to get them to revolt. In a rambling telephone call to Libyan state television, Gaddafi said that those revolting are loyal to bin Laden. And he said, "This is al-Qaeda that the whole world is fighting. Al-Qaeda militants are exploiting teenagers, giving them pills in their coffee, making them do strange things." Doug Hagman, Homeland Security expert, he's on with us here. I guess everybody blames bin Laden on this one, huh?
Well, you know, in this particular case, he also compared his 41 years as a ruler of Libya with the Queen of England's 59-year reign. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. Libya has always been the North Korea of the Arab world, and Gaddafi, of course, it's Kim Jong-il. So I think the statement's rather interesting. Now, we do know that Libya, of course, holds the largest proven oil supplies of Africa, which is estimated at 44 billion barrels in reserves. And I think that alone explains our interesting dichotomy with in how we're handling this particular case with Libya and other Arab uprisings across the Arab world.
There were reports today, Doug, that Gaddafi had been shot, unconfirmed, and I guess he's okay, but the price of oil started going back down again when they thought he was gone.
Yeah, indeed. It's kind of interesting what drives the markets. The entire uprising across the Arab world has got enormous implications. There's a common an unfortunate underestimation on what is taking place right now across the globe.
What's your gut tell you? How long does Gaddafi have? I give him a week.
If that, sir. I would say a few days. And I see some reports about how he would like or how he's expected to go out in the manner that Adolf Hitler did back in 1945.
Well, we'll see what happens. Thanks, Doug. Oil surging to a 2.5-year high, near $120 a barrel as the revolt in Libya choked exports, then eased as Saudi Arabia assured European refiners that the kingdom could step in and fill any supply shortfalls. I guess they have more oil than a lot of people thought. It's $4 a gallon plus in the Los Angeles area already. Gerald Celente, founder and director of the Trends Research Institute, he's with us here. Gerald, it's going to go higher, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. We're in dangerous territory. Even before this happened, George, oil prices were going up as other commodity prices as well. because they've devalued the dollar, and these commodities are dollar-based. The weaker the dollar, the higher the price of oil. And while Libya only accounts for 2% of production, we're looking at a crisis beginning to unfold in front of us that's very reminiscent to 1979 when the Shah fell. Oil prices soared, but so did inflation.
Yep.
And that's what we're looking at now. And here's the rub. Every dollar that goes into the pump doesn't go into the retail cash register. And 70% of our GDP is consumer-based. The higher inflation goes, they're going to have to raise interest rates. And when they raise interest rates above these near zero rates that the Federal Reserve, this Ponzi scheme that they've put together, once the rates go up, the phony recovery collapses.
It's over then, Gerald, isn't it?
It is.
Well, watch it. Watch it closely. Gerald Celente's website, trendsresearch.com, puts out an incredible newsletter. Toyota Motor Corporation recalling 2.17 million vehicles in the United States to address accelerator pedals that have become entrapped in floor mats or jammed in the driver's side carpeting, prompting federal regulators to finally close the investigation into the embattled automaker. So they're going to try to fix all those cars. The Space Shuttle Discovery launching from the Kennedy Space Center for the last time today. Its 11-day mission will see it deliver a new storeroom and sophisticated humanoid robot to the International Space Station. When a cardiac patient undergoes a heart transplant, surgeons almost always remove the damaged heart and replace it with a new one. But that was not the scenario that unfolded in an operating room at a San Diego hospital this month. Instead of removing Tyson Smith's enlarged heart, a team of doctors from the UC San Diego Center for Transplantation kept his heart in place and then transplanted a second one. That's right. The 36-year-old now has two beating hearts, and they say he can last about 10 more years, maybe. Kind of a sad story. It's up at coasttocoastam.com. Listen to this. A postcard from a World War I soldier about to be shipped off to war has finally arrived, 94 years later, and to the wrong address. Alfred Arthur, he was 19 years old when he wrote to his sister Ellen, known as Nell, in January 1916 from his camp in the United Kingdom, the day before he was going to be sent to liberate France. The message reads, "Dear Nell, just a postcard to let you know I have not forgotten you. On the other side, you will see our orders for next week. Poor me. I shall need your pity. Drop me a line, Brother Alfred." However, the postcard did not reach its destination before Alfred died 2 years later in the war, and his sister Nell died in 1964. In fact, when the postcard was finally delivered these 94 years later, it was put through the door of the house opposite the actual address where Lauren Bleach lives. The 61-year-old Bleach said, "Well, it came with the rest of the post stuff. We couldn't believe our eyes. We first found it, thought it was amusing that it took 94 years to get here. And even then, they delivered it to the wrong door." But then, as we started to read it and read what the postcard said, we were so emotionally taken by it. With the aid of a local genealogist, Lauren traced one of Alfred's great nephews, Brian Buxton, and his great niece, Angela Finch, handed them over the postcard. The 68-year-old Brian said, "It's unbelievable and also very sad. He died tragically, yet he didn't know that she hadn't received the postcard. I feel sorry for Nellie. They were close, yet she never heard from him. But I'm glad that his family finally has the postcard." How about that? Up next, we're going to be talking about, is the government infringing on our lives? Up next, constitutional lawyer Jonathan Emord on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Jonathan Emord, principal of Emord and Associates, practices constitutional and administrative law in Washington, D.C. before the federal agencies. Now, he's the only attorney in history that has defeated the FDA 7 times in federal court, 6 times on First Amendment grounds. And he began his legal career as an attorney in the Mass Media Bureau of the FCC. That was in 1985 during the Reagan administration, and here he is back on Coast to Coast. His books, by the way, The Rise of Tyranny and Global Censorship of Health Information. Jonathan, welcome back.
George, it's great to be with you.
My pleasure. So we advocate people buying LED lights because these mercury lights we're going to talk about in a second, which they're starting to push down our throats, are pretty darn dangerous. But tell us what's going to happen January 1st, 2012.
Well, Congress, unfortunately, in the Energy Independence and Security Act 2007, is banning all of those incandescent light bulbs. Thomas Alva Edison's invention, been good for us for 132 years. It's going to disappear by 2014, January 1, 2012. All 100-watt bulbs will be illegal. January 1, 2013, all 75-watt bulbs will disappear. January 1, 2014, all 40 and 60-watt bulbs will disappear.
Now, when you say illegal, does that mean we got to unscrew them in our lamps and throw them away, or just we're not going to be able to buy them anymore?
Not going to be able to buy them. They'll be illegal to sell.
What are they doing this for? The so-called energy conservation?
They're a bit insane. This is CFLs, they're called compact fluorescent lights, will replace them if they ban these bulbs. The only ones available will be these compact fluorescent lights, CFLs, and they're 75% more energy efficient than incandescent bulbs, but they contain 3 to 30 milligrams of mercury in gas tubes per light, and they are toxic little bombs.
You know, ever since this started, and I saw this coming, you know, I started replacing my personal light bulbs at home with LED light bulbs because we've got a client that has been manufacturing them for years now, and Bob Crane has always been telling me, George, it's going to go this way, trust me. And, you know, we talked about these mercury-containing compact fluorescent bulbs. They're pretty dangerous, aren't they?
Oh, they really are. Generally speaking, to the environment as a whole, they're dangerous. 2 to 4 tons of mercury are poured into the environment each year by the CFLs presently. And when the only lights available are CFLs, that figure is going to easily triple. Even tiny amounts of mercury can cause neurologic, gastrointestinal, and renal system damage. The EPA says that chronic exposure to mercury in amounts above 0.1 micrograms per kilogram of body weight is toxic. Mercury is highly toxic to the fetal brain, to infants, to pregnant women. It's really extraordinary. And mercury vaporizes at room temperature. So as soon as it's released, it becomes a gas in your house. And the EPA has even set up a criteria that it says homeowners must follow to decontaminate their house if one of these lights breaks. So you've got the effect of this law is to make every American home and every American business a toxic site.
Yeah, that's dangerous. Now, these little squiggly lights that you see at the store, are these the CFLs as well?
They are. The spiral tube lights are the CFLs.
Okay. So we got to watch that. People be on guard with that. Food prices, Jonathan, seem to be going through the roof these days. What's going on?
Well, unfortunately, we've got a shortage of various foodstuffs around the world as a result of agricultural problems and environmental problems. So we have a shortage of food, but we also have increased energy costs, which are translating themselves into increased costs for the production of foodstuffs. So it's a combination of a sort of a perfect storm.
And if we get hit with a drought sometime this summer, what kind of problem are we going to have then?
Well, we're going to have all sorts of problems. We're likely to see various fruits and vegetables become more difficult to obtain. Even the ones that are coming from overseas are not always available, so you depend upon these products being domestically made. And, of course, the prices of products that are brought in from overseas are higher. So what will happen is there will be various shortages and also increased costs for these things. So food is going to become an inflationary factor very, very soon. It already is, but it's going to become a real pressure point for inflation in the United States in the very near future.
Well, and worldwide, we've seen what happens to populations that can't afford food or get food. they begin to riot. They're out of control. That's one of the reasons that they went nuts in Egypt. The price of food was soaring while Mubarak had his steak dinners.
Absolutely. If you look throughout the Middle East, one of the principal problems is either inflation on food or food shortages, high unemployment and high prices for commodities. And that has fed into this revolutionary movement from everywhere, from Libya to Cameroon to Bahrain to Algeria, Djibouti, Iran, Jordan, Kuwait, Sudan. I mean, all throughout the Middle East, the same characteristics are largely at play in feeding into these revolutionary movements.
Though on one hand, international terrorism could slow down, at least coming to this country. I sense, and you know, the story is indicative today with the Saudi student who's here, people who are here or homebred people, that's a potential danger of terrorism, Jonathan.
It sure is, and this is the only silver lining in all of this. We've got these horrendous increases in oil prices that are going to really hit our economy. But the positive side here is that radicals are turning inward as revolution spreads throughout the Middle East, rather than taking off to go to terrorist training camps and become part of a movement to go get the great Satan. They're now turning inward because they're recognizing, it's an epiphany for people in the Middle East, that the leaders, the dictators' representation, that everything is a fault of the West, that the reason why your food prices are higher, the reason why you have unemployment is because of the evil actions taken by these greedy capitalists and these abusive hedonistic people in the West. Well, that's all turning into rubbish as they start to realize that corruption and abuses and civil rights violations are the product of their own regimes. And this is causing radicals to be initially in a somewhat of a state of confusion, but to progress into a mode where they're interested in saving their own backyard. They're trying to protect their families and to transform the nations in which they live into regimes that they will favor whatever particular political angle they have. And that that is greatly beneficial for the war on terror because it diminishes the supply of fresh new blood into the ranks of the terrorists.
Well, I couldn't believe the remarks of Gaddafi today, Jonathan. Here's a guy who is one of the world's worst terrorists. I mean, he was behind bombings of planes and everything else. And he's blaming Al-Qaeda now for the problems in Libya.
He has always, you know, for the 42 years of his reign, and his Green Revolution, he came into power, I think it was 69, he has always used this notion of Western secret intelligence agents being responsible for various things happening in his country. It creates this conspiratorial environment in which he says that everything that is evil in his country is the result of foreign influences. But that doesn't wash. What he's missing here, of course, is that people are on to him finally, and they won't accept it. And the eastern part of Libya, he's lost total control over it. It's a disaster for him, and in Tripoli itself, it's crumbling. And his days, I think, are numbered.
You think Saudi Arabia is going to keep things down? They're going to keep the lid on problems?
Well, they're attempting to make major reforms in Saudi Arabia that will improve the condition for people's lives. But, you know, one truism is coming out of this all the way around the Middle East, and that is that people are recognizing that their rights are important, and that unless they have a say, life is rather miserable. That doesn't mean that they're going to get a Western style democracy. I don't think they will. I think they're probably going to experience dictatorships replacing dictatorships, military juntas replacing single dictators, and there'll be reforms. But I think in large measure, they will be superficial, unfortunately for them. But at least they're recognizing that their problems are homegrown, and we're not to blame for them.
Jonathan, when we come back, I want to talk about your work in the health field, and we'll get into supplements and what the FDA and the FTC are trying to do to dramatically control supplements and give you your ability to heal yourself. We'll be back in a moment with Jonathan Emord. We'll also take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we're going live to our affiliate, KFYI in Phoenix, with Linda Moulton Howe, investigative reporter. She is at the International UFO Congress. She's got some great guests with her, and I'll be doing my little chit-chat with Linda while I'm in the L.A. studios. But she's getting ready to go, and she'll be joining us in about 30 minutes right here on Coast to Coast AM. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion with the attorney of constitutional law, Jonathan Emord. He fought the FDA and won. We're going to talk about what's happening in the world of supplements, and we'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you and Jonathan Emord and your phone calls. Jonathan, what's going on in the world of supplements and the FDA, FTC?
Well, more of the same, but it's becoming a lot worse for companies that make these products. They are in a difficult spot, and a large number of them are going to disappear in the next couple of years because of aggressive federal enforcement and the creation of an effective FDA, FTC mega agency. The details of why this is are explained at length in my book, The Rise of Tyranny and Global Censorship of Health Information, available through emord.com, a secure link to amazon.com. But in brief, these agencies' leaders find it in their own personal interest to protect the drug industry from competition. It's in their own financial interest. Post-government employment is best secured this way. But recent developments show that this path of protectionism, anti-competitive regulation, is accelerating under the Obama administration as the FDA and the FTC collaborate to bring about greater restrictions on the ability to communicate health information in the supplement and natural food area.
You know, right now you go to your drugstore, they've got a whole shelf of supplements. You can get them online. You can get them through quality companies online. If they take that away, and I've always been a staunch believer in alternative medicine coupled with mainstream medicine, if they take that away from us, where are we, Jonathan? We're literally at their stranglehold, aren't we?
Well, we are, and what will happen is there will be an increase in the incidence of age-related diseases like cardiovascular disease and cancer that many of these supplements are effective in reducing the risk of. So we're going to have a change in health that is going to be adverse. At the same time, people will become more dependent upon drugs, and the information in the marketplace will lead them in that direction. So the anti-competitive system that is created by FDA and FTC regulation really does work to make people drug dependent. Right now, for example, the FTC for the first time is adopting the FDA's prior restraint on the right to communicate nutrient disease information in an extraordinary move in three consent orders from the FTC against Nestle's Iovate and Danone. The agency for the first time said that if you are going to get FTC's approval on your advertising, you have to first meet the FDA's pre-approval requirements for your nutrient disease claims. And they also are upping the ante on the level of scientific proof necessary to support even basic structure function claims. It used to be that they would accept any amount of evidence and evaluate it. They were still biased, of course, in their assessment, but now they're demanding two clinical trials as a condition before you can say anything about a health benefit. Two clinical trials, that's roughly $1 million of expense before you can say, for example, glucosamine is good for your joints. Now that's going to really put the kibosh on the right to communicate in the market. At the same time, the FDA is enforcing the FTC's position. In a February 1, 2011 warning letter, FDA told Scientific Formulations, a supplement company, that it had to comply with the FTC's requirements on advertising, it had to have well-controlled clinical trials, and that it had to communicate with the FTC at the same time and respond to their requirements at the same time as it's enforcing the FDA's requirements. And this is unprecedented. It used to be the FDA would look at labeling, FTC would look at advertising, But now the Obama administration is mixing the two and elevating the standards of proof at the same time, which is going to suppress more information, give the drug companies a greater monopoly on therapeutic information in the market, and really do a number on consumers by keeping emerging science from them in the market.
Is there any attempt to try to at least regulate with the intent of keeping, you know, shoddy companies out of the marketplace?
Well, you know, that would have been an ideal circumstance. A number of years ago, the National Nutritional Foods Association, now the Natural Products Association, went to the FDA and asked for good manufacturing practice guidelines. Sounds like a good idea.
Absolutely.
But instead of advocating testing for finished products to show whether they're adulterated, they advocated process controls, the most costly, burdensome, intrusive regulation possible over an industry. And the reason was the big supplement companies thought that if process controls were adopted by FDA, they would drive out of existence small competitors and give them the lion's share. But they miscalculated, because the FDA loved the process controls, but has engineered them into a massive 1,000-plus page rule that is so onerous, it'll even drive out some big companies. So they freaked out in the end. They realized that they weren't the lobbyist power at the FDA. The lobbying power at the FDA is the pharmaceutical industry. So now suddenly the pharmaceutical industry is getting into the supplement industry, creating its own brand of supplements.
That's right.
As the FDA goes around the country doing inspections in these supplement plants and closing them down for failing to meet all these rigorous record-keeping requirements and process controls without regard to the finished product. You can have a perfectly safe supplement, and the FDA can shut you down because you didn't have proper record-keeping.
And it's all being done so they could help their buddies at Big Pharma.
Absolutely. No question about it. And the result is clear. Even in the final rule the FDA adopted, it admitted that 25% of the supplement industry would likely be eliminated by enforcement of its rule, that the cost of supplements would increase, and that the variety of them would decrease. It did that after we submitted a economic analysis by Steve Hanke, former senior economist of the Reagan Council of Economic Advisors, that predicted these results. And OMB wouldn't let FDA publish its rule because our comments it took seriously. And they said, look, you don't have an adequate economic assessment in your rule. So FDA surprised us all and adopted our economic assessment and said, sure, you're right. It'll wipe out a quarter of the industry. Now, can we publish the rule? OMB said, okay, you did what you were supposed to do. Make it a rule.
Jeez, let's take some calls, Jonathan. One quick question about the light bulbs. Chandeliers, for example, have these neat decorative little lights that look like little candles, right? They're
right.
Shaped like candles, but they're incandescent. What happens to them?
Goodbye. I don't know what is going to happen with people.
You know how tacky a fluorescent bulb will look like in a chandelier?
Oh my goodness! I mean, the whole thing is so ridiculous. It's a real, you know, on the one side it's hilarious that this ridiculous thing was done by Congress. Then you sit down and think about it. My goodness, this is one of the most intrusive regulations by Congress, one of the most directly offensive regulations to the individual than you can imagine. Congress is presuming to tell us how best to light our own houses. I mean, if there's no more fundamental decision than let there be light by switching on the electric switch in your house, it's hard to imagine one. Maybe it's the food side, and they're doing the damages. We're talking about that on that side, too. But my goodness, if we can't choose an incandescent light bulb because it's less energy efficient, Congress is going way overboard. And then to think these things are little mercury bombs in your house. You know, if one of these things drops on a carpet, then you have to, in order to decontaminate your house, you have to cut the carpet segment out that was affected by the breakage and send it off to a recycling place that deals with mercury and pay a fee So you not only lose a part of your carpet, you also have to pay for the loss of your carpet.
Good point. Let's take some calls here. We'll pick it up by going to Folsom, California. Alan's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Alan, go ahead.
Oh, hi. Good evening. I wanted to make the comment that the government keeps pushing us to use more and more of this alcohol, that they use grains and corn to make this alcohol. I heard now like one out of three rows of corn goes towards fuel that we're burning in our cars when we need food. The whole world needs food, and it costs a lot of money to grow those crops and then to go ahead and burn them, and it takes diesel fuel for the tractors. You got to process it at the processing that takes natural gas or something to boil it, and all the fertilizers, and then instead of eating it, we're burning it. And to me, this is insane with the price of food and where it's going.
You know what, Jonathan, the American Corn Growers Association has always claimed that there's an abundance of corn available for ethanol and fuel and to feed animals and the population. I'm not sure that's the case.
Well, one of the big problems that your listener hits upon is agricultural subsidies. I mean, the Department of Agriculture causes all sorts of perverse effects in the agricultural marketplace by subsidizing certain foodstuffs, and then we have import restrictions on other foodstuffs coming into our country, and these things do create market dislocations, sometimes creating food shortages, sometimes creating situations where the prices rise or decline. There are price supports that force up the price of certain foodstuffs. So we have a very heavily regulated food market, and as a result, we do not get the benefit of a natural effect of supply and demand. We should have an overabundance of fruits and vegetables in this country. There's no reason why we shouldn't. We have one of the most productive agricultural communities in the world. Indeed, it is the most productive in the world. And yet, for some reason or other, I mean, you and I both know, you'll go to the grocery store and you'll say, my goodness, these tomatoes taste terrible, but also they're only these certain varieties. Gee, well, I remember when I was a kid, there were all sorts of different colors and different varieties and different tastes available. But it's been affected largely by the practices of the federal government regulating agricultural markets.
Good point. All right. Thanks for that call. Let's go next to Tom in St. Paul, Minnesota. Tom, thank you. Go ahead.
I missed the first part of the discussion about the incandescent light bulbs, but was there any mention about the health effects of the new fluorescent bulbs?
Yes. I'll let you repeat that, Jonathan.
Yes, well, unfortunately, these lovely bulbs will do a number on you, both neurological, gastrointestinal, and renal system damage. And for autistic kids, many autistic kids, the flicker in those lights causes them to have headaches. People with migraine headaches sometimes have them triggered by those lights and the CFLs. And also some with autoimmune disorders have those disorders aggravated by the flicker in these lights. So there are all sorts of problems that result from the mercury, but also even the difference in the nature of the burn, the flicker in those lights, causes problems for a large number of people, very significant subset of the American population.
Okay, we go to Mark now in San Antonio, Texas, east of the Rockies. Mark, you're on.
Wow, didn't think that was going to come that quick. Good evening, you guys. How are you doing?
Great.
This is some serious stuff we're talking about, and I've been in this field for some years. This fellow here, John Emor, is that correct? Jonathan Emor, yeah. My middle name is Jonathan. Good to meet you today. This stuff you're talking about, all of it, I've experienced a lot of it with different things. An example, if y'all give me some time here, I'll give you just one thing.
Can't give you too much because we're almost done. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering, and all this stuff that's put on us in trouble, I'm wondering, do we have some power over it to really get something done? An example, I found something in Hebrews chapter 9, verses 13 through 17 that talked about a will and testament, and this is referencing heavenly things, but dealing with it, in an aspect of a will and testament where there's no, somebody can't play around with it. You know what I mean?
Well, here's the big question, Jonathan. What can people do about all these things we've been talking about?
Well, in my books, The Rise of Tyranny and Global Censorship of Health Information, I explain the problems in detail, and I also explain the solutions. I've written two bills for Congressman Ron Paul that have been introduced that would address these issues. It's also discussed in the books. The books are available through emord.com, a secure link to amazon.com. But also, they can look at newswithviews.com columns that I've written there. And I'd also encourage them to come to the Health Freedom Expo. You're going to be there, George.
That's right. I will be. That's the end of March, right?
Right. You're going to be there Saturday, March 26th. People can go to lunch with you. It's a really extraordinary opportunity for folks to actually meet George. And I hope to be able to see you, George. I'm going to be on a panel there with you.
Super.
It's the healthfreedomexpo.com. That's the site to go to get the tickets to see George. Anyway, the short answer is, yes, we can, not to use President Obama's language, but yes, we can overcome the problems that occur here, but it all depends upon the implementation of rather simple mechanisms that have profound solutions. And I'll give you just one. In a bill called the Congressional Responsibility and Accountability Act that I wrote for Congressman Ron Paul, the independent regulatory agencies, which are largely unaccountable and create regulation over the American economy that is unaffected by who we vote into office, because these people are unelected, and yet they create 9/10 of all federal law. This is a violation of the delegation of powers principle that underlies our Constitution. The solution in this bill causes no regulation to come into effect until Congress itself passes it into law. And that's just because the Constitution and Article 1 says Congress shall make all laws. So we revert back to our constitutional origins, transform this country from a bureaucratic oligarchy into a republic, and we can restore liberty as the central value sovereign characteristic of our country. Our country was built on individual liberty. The Declaration of Independence says that just governments are created for the purpose of protecting the rights of the governed. And yet we've lost this. We're no longer sovereign. We have a bunch of buffoons in Washington who really rule our lives and think they know better than we do how to conduct our affairs, from supplements to food in the store to energy. And yet market forces are the source of the wealth that has generated prosperity for this nation for for 200 years. And the movement away from it is really in large measure at the bottom of almost all of our economic problems.
Well, I am glad, Jonathan, though, that we have people like you. You know, the law industry takes a rap sometimes, but you're a lawyer and you're out there fighting for us. And you know what? I got to commend you on that.
Well, thank you, George.
You know, we're almost at the top of the hour. This was fast. We got to get you back again, and just keep your eyes out there for us, would you? We need watchdogs like you.
Well, thank you so much, George.
Jonathan Emord, his two books, The Rise of Tyranny, Global Censorship of Health Information. Now, up next, we're going live to Phoenix, affiliate KFYI, our monster station out there in Phoenix. Linda Moulton Howe is attending this weekend the International UFO Congress with many incredible people, and she's got some of them with her in that studio. So we'll be joining her next on Coast to Coast AM.